is a web series and podcast created by Temple of Geek. At the core of the project is telling the important stories of women who have found inspiration, growth, and power through fandom. My name is Jenna Wren, and I'm the host of Portrait of a Fangirl podcast. And today I'm here with Tara Sam. Hi, Tara. How are you?
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for coming on. I'm super excited to hear your stories and what you have to share with us today.
We'll see. Well, let's get into it, and then you can decide if you're happy with it or not.
I'm sure I will be. Can you please just start off by introducing yourself to our audience and just telling us a little bit about who you are?
Sure. My name is Tara Sands. I'm a voice actor. I consider myself an actor. Sometimes I put the voice in front of it. I don't know if I always need to do that, but that's something we could talk about. Yeah, and I work on shows like Pokemon and Jujutsu Kaisen and Digimon and Yu-Gi-Oh! And Rainbow High and all different stuff. I'm very tons of audiobooks, commercials, video games. I basically am a talker. I will do anything you tell me to say, I will say. with some limits, but yes.
That can get you into trouble sometimes, I would think.
Yes. Well, I will always say, like, I talked too much as a kid. And I used to get detention and get in trouble. And I was like, I'll make this a job.
There you go.
Do what you love and try to get paid for it.
Right. Maybe I should have been a voice actor. My grandfather nicknamed me Jenna Jabberjaw when I was little because I used to love to talk.
So Jabberjaw's so cute.
That's a good one, right? Yeah,
that is adorable.
So maybe I made the wrong career choice.
Well, you're doing it right. You're talking right now.
That's true.
This totally counts. Try to get paid.
So something we always really like to ask our guests is how they view the term fangirl. So to you, what does being a fangirl mean? And has that changed over the years?
Oh, for sure. So I think when growing up, because I'm a bit older than you, that was definitely a negative thing. Even though I was a fangirl of certain things, but I think if you had said that to me, I would have been like, no, I just really like it. There's a negative connotation with all things geek, or I mean, especially anime, you know, we're talking about, and that it's a different world now. I think, you know, people embrace their inner geek, but it's not this, a lot of this stuff is mainstream. So it's not even, which is a tricky thing too, because you're like, well, just because it's mainstream, now that we don't have to say it's a secret interest, is that, I don't know if that negates the, I want to say this the right way. Now that it's mainstream, I think people should still be embracing their inner weirdness, geekiness, nerdiness, whatever you want to call it, otherness. And it's cool that anime is mainstream, but I hope we don't lose the fun nichiness of it all.
Right. Yeah, it was more of like, I know growing up, well, Pokemon was one of the big things that really took the world by storm when I was growing up. And it was very niche, like you said, very different.
Well, it's funny too, because like Pokemon is sort of became like a launch pad for people who then wanted to find more anime. Like kids who watched it didn't necessarily know that they were watching anime. And it's the kids who, and I'm sure you were one of them, were like, what is this? I want to learn more. And then went down that rabbit hole of this other stuff that was maybe harder to find than Pokemon.
Right.
But yeah, I think being a fangirl maybe was a dirty word, or it sounded like I'm trying to think of what the right thing would be, because if it was a sports thing, I think maybe that would be looked at differently than if it was a fangirl of something like sci-fi. You know, I think there were different camps of fandom, that makes sense.
Right. Like for instance, like when you say sci-fi, I think right away of Star Trek, and like Trekkies were considered very different than, you know, somebody who's in a sports fandom or even music or something that's more, I almost want to say acceptable, but, you know, I guess mainstream.
I mean, I was a fangirl of certain musical groups, or never really got into sports, but like musical theater. I mean, I was a hardcore fangirl of musical theater. I still am. And no shame in that. You know what I mean? Right. It maybe wasn't what whoever was considered the cool kids in school were into, but I didn't give a shit. I was like, this is what I like. Yeah.
Right. And like fangirling, I think, like when I think of it, it's very, very tuned into like boy bands. Like boy bands were huge. So music is a part of that. It's not just like comics or TV. It could be music. It could be sports. But I always think of boy bands.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, there've always been boy, you know, I think like we didn't call them that. But when you look at like through history, the Beatles were a boy band. We didn't say that, but
they were.
This has always been a thing. I actually do there's a channel on Sirius XM called Boy Bands, and I do the voice for it. And it's really fun because I'm like saying all the names of all these great bands, but sometimes they'll throw in like a Jackson 5 or like this was a boy band, technically Menudo or whatever.
They were all boy bands.
Totally. And I think it's finding the healthy relationship with it. Like I'm very obsessed with that's backwards. I shouldn't say I'm obsessed with, because then it sounds negative, but I'm really interested in learning about healthy fandom.
Right.
And where we draw the lines of obsession and when it's a healthy love of something.
Right. Yeah, and that's interesting fact. That's a very interesting point to bring up.
I'd love to interview someone who's an expert on that, but I don't know who that person is.
Yeah, it would have to be, I guess, somebody, I almost want to say like a psychological aspect, right?
Mm-hmm.
That would be very interesting.
Stan, I mean, it's what Stan became. You know, like it's what it's based on is this unhealthy obsession.
Right.
And now we throw the word stan around like it's like, oh, I stan this, I stan that. And it's like, actually, that's bad. Like that means you are stalking them maybe at that point.
I was going to say, it kind of reminds me of like when you get into like stalkers or something along those lines, that kind of is when it's taken to the extreme.
Right. And we use the word otaku, you know, we throw that around. And again, I think that it's especially if someone's calling themselves an otaku, it's fine. But then you're like, okay, where's the limit? Where's the...
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I don't have the answer.
No. And it's I guess, maybe it's an individual thing. Maybe it comes down to the person themselves and how they present themselves within the fandom. I don't know. It's a very interesting conversation to have.
Or how much it overcomes your life.
Right.
You know, if you can't go to work because you need to watch, you know, you need to play all through a video game before you can go back to work. Maybe that's an unhealthy balance.
Right.
Yeah.
And very interesting. I would love to hear that conversation. If you ever do find someone to talk to, send it my way.
There is one person I need to keep following up on, because for my podcast, we'll talk about that later, but I am really interested in fandom, and someone did recommend one woman, but she never wrote back to me. So I'm still diving deeper to see who's an expert.
Yeah. If anyone's listening to this, knows an expert, reach out. When was the first moment you really found yourself fangirling over something?
I remember being in New York and someone like was like, there's Bernadette Peters.
Oh,
and
wow.
Like she was walking down the street, and I remember my knees buckling. Like I never understood that expression. Like my knees went weak or my knees. And I was like, I just could. It was like seeing royalty. I mean, this was like I met God. Like, or not. I mean, I didn't even meet her. I saw her walking down the street, and I could not believe this was a human who shared the same street and pavement as I did. So, because that's where my fandom lies, it was musicals at that time. And yeah, I fully think I understood it at that point.
Yeah, I don't think it gets much bigger for a musical theater fangirl than Bernadette Peters. That's like,
oh my God.
Wow, that's fantastic. I couldn't even imagine.
yeah. I mean, like, and again, I didn't say anything. I would never have been brave enough to say anything.
Right.
Just being near her was so cool.
Just seeing her, experiencing her presence.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what's interesting too. Like because of my jobs and I used to interview celebrities and stuff, I've met so many people and I don't get nervous when I know I'm going to meet them. It's when I see them in the wild that it's more exciting, like Whole Foods. Like if I see them in the supermarket, that's so much more interesting and makes me nervous as opposed to if you put a microphone in my hand. And you're like, interview Angelina Jolie. Like, I was fine. You know, it's just, the supermarket is weird.
There's structure to that. There's you know,
yeah.
Oh, if I crossed someone's path in the supermarket like that, I don't think I could handle it.
I know. Well, and then you try not to stare, and then you become a crazy person. Yeah.
See, I'm very friendly. So I know this actually did happen to me one time. I know, veering off topic, but I ran into one of the MCU Netflix show stars. Finn Jones, who does Iron Fist at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Ran into him on the train, and we were sitting next to each other, and I was, I know you. Like, I just...
Right. But when you're... And also, like, you're already sitting next to each other. Like, you kind of got to say something at that point.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's just... As long as you're respectful and, you know, I guess a healthy person, you're not, like, coming on, yes. like you said, like a stalker or stan kind of thing.
Yeah, there's a way to do it.
Right. Can you tell us a little bit about your job as a voice actor and what it's like to do that?
Yeah, sure. So I talk, I wake up, I talk, and then I keep talking. Yeah, so... Like today is a good example. So like I had to do some auditions when I woke up and then in the middle of an audiobook and I'm directing myself basically. So you just try to be disciplined. I did not get a lot done because I get distracted by the world and the internet and Twitter and Instagram. And yeah, so those days are tough because I'm in charge of myself. Then there's days when I have a director that I'm like going to a studio, like for a show like Jujutsu Kaisen, a lot of that's done at a studio with a director and an engineer. And then I can get a lot. but every day is different, which is what I like about my job. You know, sometimes I have book a, you know, video game and they don't tell me in advance anything about it. So like I'm just cold reading everything, which is super fun. And nerve-wracking, but I find I enjoy that.
Right.
Yeah, and I enjoy just working on different projects and that every day is completely bananas and different.
So with the audiobooks, are you basically kind of given a deadline? How does that work? Or they say, you know, finish it by this day?
Yeah, I mean, some do have a director, but for the most don't. And they say, here's your book, here's your due date, get questions in by this date. So that, because I don't usually have communication with the author. So I'm, you know, waiting for responses from publishers to ask the, you know, because there's like in this book right now, then there's a name that's L-E-A-H, which I always pronounce Leah.
Right.
But there are some people that might pronounce that Lee. So, or Le, I mean, who knows? You know, the author might have something else in her brain. So I send in a question like that. And sometimes that like screws up your deadline or, you know, you wait for a response. Luckily, I got it pretty quickly. So, yeah, I'm kind of left to my own devices.
Right.
It's weird.
I guess it's a good and a bad thing because, like you said, you do have the time and the freedom to kind of get distracted. Right? Yeah.
But I also have the time. Like, I went to Trader Joe's today in the middle of the day because I can now just work on it tonight. You know, I don't have this. I don't have not locked into, like, a strict schedule.
Right. That's nice. The sense of freedom.
Yeah. And I want to be at Trader Joe's all the time. So the more time I have to go to Trader Joe's.
Record your audiobook at Trader Joe's.
I would love to record an audiobook about Trader Joe's. Oh, my God. They have a podcast. You know, there's Trader Joe's Insider, I think it's called. Their company makes a podcast about,
really?
Like, new items. Sorry, this is not what your audience wants to know about.
Hey, I think that's super interesting.
I do. I like it. I'm into it.
So how did you wind up in the career you're in now?
So I, from a young age, knew I wanted to be an actor. It's just, it was, I don't know how else to explain it, except I knew that's what I wanted to do. And if there was nothing else I wanted to do. And I always tell people, and it's cliche, but like, don't go into this. If there's anything else you want to do, it's completely unstable. And I begged my parents, I lived in New Jersey, really close to the city. I begged my dad to get me that newspaper backstage where there were auditions. So finally, when I was in high school, they let me get that. And I begged them to take me to auditions, and they did. They were very patient and kind. And then I was in a local singing competition. I was a sophomore, I think, at the local Y. And I entered this contest, and there was a talent manager there. And she called me into her office and she's like, hey, I think we want to, you know, we're going to send you on auditions and we think you could also do voiceovers. And I'm like, I don't know what that is. And the first job they sent me on was a voiceover commercial for Compound W wart cream.
Oh.
And I had to say something like, ew, gross, a wart. And I booked the job and it was my first audition. Like, So something in the universe was like, this is what you're supposed to do. And I did the job. I put on the headphones in the studio. I felt so cool. But I did not at that point know that this was going to be my focus. I continued doing a lot of theater, television work, hosting work on a TV show, all different things. And the thing I kept coming back to was voiceover. And I love, you know, I got this job on Pokemon, which in, I guess, 99, 98, was my first anime job. I didn't know anything about anime. But yet still, I was like, I'm a serious actor. And I kept going back to that. And then I was like, wait, there's other ways to do voiceover where it is more fulfilling. Because like anime, as much as I love it, we're working alone. We're only seeing our part of the script a lot of the time. And there's other things in voiceover. I mean, gosh, some of my favorite work has been on video games and intense stuff where you're calling on whatever training you have and or whatever life experience you have. So cool. I feel lucky to really only be doing voiceover work right now.
That's such a great story. It's, you know, something you were always meant to be in.
I think so. I think that, you know, listen, I'm not very like spiritual or universe-y, but I think it, the world just guides you to where you're supposed to be somehow. Like I was going to end up here. I used to quote commercials as a kid. Like this was, this was going to happen. And I always tell kids that like, you're going to be surprised at what you end up doing. It's probably not what you think. But it's, you're going to get there. Just right. Be patient. And yeah.
Exactly. Do you ever find yourself fangirling over one of your roles or some of the characters that you've played?
I'd like to be some of the characters I'd play. Like, if I could trade places and be Bisky from Hunter x Hunter for a day.
That'd be cool.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, I'd like to be her. She travels with a masseuse and then can kick butt. So I, you know, anyone that like the characters I fangirl over that I love are the ones that have really cliche girly sides. You know, I don't know. I know that that terminology is probably changing, but the cliche of that, but then also can kick ass and are tough and strong and, you know, all those things. It's that great balance of human. So, yeah, I mean, I would love to be some of my characters. I'm trying to think, I mean, Bulbasaur. I don't know that I'd want to fangirl over Bulbasaur.
Maybe in the universe, in like the Pokemon universe.
Yeah, like if I was going to have to be a Pokemon, like, yeah, Ash treats him pretty well. I mean, it's, you know,
I guess I'm not a bad gig.
Yeah, why not? I think they get fed well.
They treat it better than some of the other Pokemon out there, so.
Well, yes, that's a good point. Yeah. And he's so cute.
He is so cute. They're all adorable.
Yeah.
But and you said it was like 1999 that you started Pokemon?
Yeah, I was part of the original dub cast in New York. So
huge.
That was a minute. That was a long time ago. I was part of the first 8 seasons until the cast got replaced. So I feel very lucky to have been part of the beginning of that.
Right. That was, you know, I would think when it really first hit the U.S., when it first like exploded.
Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy. We didn't, I mean, listen, my first day of work there, I was like, what is this weird show? Good luck. Never see you guys again. It was, I mean, this is a lot of what the podcast I made is about, is them taking a chance on this show that, yes, was successful overseas in Japan, but I don't, most of us looked at it as adults and were like, what is this?
Exactly, yeah.
But there's so much heart, and I've realized over the years, and speaking of like, fangirling over, I fangirl over the artwork because these characters, especially the original 150, like they speak to children in a way that is just remarkable. Kids see this stuff and are just on into it. And now I understand that. Now I understand that it has to do, and you know, speaking of fandom and that, the Pokemon company understood how to approach this from all angles, from a TV show to a card game, to the video games, to it was all encompassing, and it was hard not to capture a kid's attention, even if they only watched the show or they only collected the cards. I mean, there are kids who collect those cards and have never played a game or watched the show. They're just obsessed with the collection.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you talk about fandom, the Pokemon Company is an expert at knowing how to capture fans.
Right, they really are. It's so funny because it was so popular when I was in, I guess, like middle school. But I never really watched the show until I had really little siblings. My sister and I are 17 years apart. And she had me watch it with her. And I was probably in my 20s. I was like, I can't believe I missed out on this. This show is amazing. It's so good.
That's so cute. Yeah, I mean, it's my cousin's kid was, I was dropping something off to my cousin's kid one day. And he was about 5, I think, at the time. And he and his friends were holding the Pokemon cards. And I was like, hey, guys, I thought maybe I'll give him some street cred. And I was like, you know, I play some voices on the show. Do you watch the show? And they go, no, it's for babies. I was like, never mind.
Here's
your whatever I was dropping off. Yeah. And I was like, oh, my God, I just got put in my place by some 5-year-olds.
Oh, man. And you're going to be the cool lesson.
I thought I could be cool. Yeah. No.
It's so funny.
But that was a good learning moment for me, too. I was like, they are into this, but it doesn't mean they watch the show.
Right.
You know?
There's so many different facets of that particular fandom for someone to be involved in.
Totally.
What was it like to experience fandom in such an immersive way when you started attending conventions?
It was confusing because we worked in such a bubble. Like, I knew the show was big, but I didn't know anyone cared about us, which is probably for the better. I think it kept all our egos in check for sure. And there was no social media. There were some message boards, but honestly, those were mostly used to complain and to yell at the companies for things they didn't like. I was sort of late to the convention game. Like Veronica Taylor and Lise Ortiz, and Eric Stewart, they had been doing it longer than I had. And I was like, wait, you're saying that people want to meet us? They're like, not only meet you, they want like your autograph. I was like, there's no way. And I have traveled the world meeting these people. And what I've realized too, it's like, it's not about being a fan of me necessarily, because I have to take myself out of the equation. It's about what these shows meant to them and where they were in their life when they first saw them. Because that is so powerful. Nostalgia is so powerful. I've heard so many times that someone was going through a tough point in their life when they started watching the show and it got them through it. It was their distraction. It was their happy place. You know, I've told this before, like someone's house burned down and they only had their Yu-Gi-Oh! VHS tape or whatever, or DVD. So it's what this represents. And if I'm there representing the face of this thing that is so much bigger than I am, and I'm a cog in this wheel, I'm happy to be there for them to share their story. But I in no way feel responsible for the success of these shows. I think it would be unhealthy to think that I am responsible for it.
It must be very touching to hear these stories, though, from people of all different walks of life.
Oh, that's the that's what it is. I mean, and the fact that they're trusting me with this information, it's huge. It's what I make sure that at every convention, I at least have like a connection like that. And I let someone just go on and on for as long as they need to tell me this. And then I try to compare it to what I'm a fan of and what I would have said to Bernadette Peters that day if I was allowed to talk to her. So that's, you know, it's an honor. It's a privilege. It's crazy that anyone wants to talk to me. I find it strange.
But you now run a podcast and it's called Four Kids Flashback.
Yes,
so
I do.
I want to talk to you a little bit about that and hear just kind of how you got started with this. So can you just tell me a little bit about what the podcast is?
Yeah, so for people who don't know, 4Kids is the company that brought shows like Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! And Shaman King, and they did a version of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and they were responsible for a lot of the stuff in your childhoods that you watched, and they took a real risk with Pokemon. Nobody wanted it. They are also a company that has been yelled at many times for changing anime, for maybe Americanizing it, or making cuts in it that to make it more appropriate for children because it was on Saturday mornings. And I get asked about it at conventions all the time. And it occurred to me that there were people who should be at these conventions and answering these questions. It's the writers, it's the producers, the people who wrote the music, the just all aspects of this, the voice directors that I wanted to shine a light on, also get answers from, but give some credit to and give attention to, because they should have that attention. So I've started interviewing everyone I can who works there, you know, the actors included, but the actors tend to know a lot less than the writers and the people who are on staff there.
Right. The people who went into more of the creative,
yep,
behind the scenes process.
For sure. Yeah. So it's basically a behind the scenes look at this company and the shows that happened during that time.
Right. It's, I mean, I did hear how they would kind of censor the shows to make it more appropriate. Like instead of a cigarette, yeah, they have a lollipop or something like that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard those stories before.
And like they would. And listen, One Piece was an example of a show. You know, we interviewed the president of the company. He's like, we shouldn't have done One Piece. We were a children's company, but it was a big hit in Japan. Toei wanted to make toys. So we acquired it and tried our best, you know, right, with what. It also created a ton more work for them. So people that yell at them for changing this stuff, it's like, they don't want to do all this extra work. This is the standards and practices,
right,
insisting that they do this.
Wow. A lot goes into that. It's a very interesting,
yeah,
job to do.
It's not a job I would be good at. So I admire anyone who could handle that.
What sort of challenges have you run into while doing this podcast?
Well, scheduling is not fun. What I found, and actually this is kind of appropriate for this podcast, is that the men I approach to do interviews are often very eager, and a lot of the women are not interested in being interviewed. And I don't think it's because they are upset about any. I think it's a difference between maybe the way we're wired and they're wanting to share maybe details about themselves or, you know, feeling, someone was like insecure about maybe not remembering enough. And I'm like, it's okay. We kind of digress. And it's been fascinating how many no's I've gotten from women as opposed to men. I think there was one man who wasn't interested. I mean, there are a few women who are like busy taking care of family members I don't know what the answer is to that. And maybe that women are shyer by nature. I don't know. I don't want to make stereotypes out of this. And I don't want to, I know we're at a point where we're figuring out gender norms and all this stuff and wanting to get away from that. But I think there's something to it that I've had many more no's from women than men. And I don't know.
I think inherently, that, I mean, I don't know, this is a trend that I've kind of seen in a lot of the women I've spoken to, where they feel like they have to justify their place in fandom. You know,
I don't think maybe men
don't feel like they have to. They're a fan of something and that's it. Like, I feel like
that's
women have to fight for their spot at the table almost.
That's a great point. Like, there's still even at conventions. And listen, I think what's great is early days of conventions, there was no line for the women's bathroom, and now there is. And I think that's very telling. But again, when you see like a group of cosplayers, sometimes it's all dudes and one or two. I think they're still earning and, you know, fighting for their place. And I think that's a great point. Yeah, I don't know.
I wonder if in general, too, I mean, I don't know, you would obviously know more, but when you're reaching out to the people who work on these shows, is the demographic generally more predominantly male than it is female?
It is, which is why I made a concerted effort to reach out to more females.
Right.
And then I was surprised by the response I was getting. Yeah.
Oh, that's an interesting trend.
I mean, it could just be that more of them are more hands-on with their elderly family members and are helping out. Like, it is interesting, though. Like, there's something societal about this. Like, I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm probably not going to figure it out, but there's something in how we're raised that is making women not as eager to talk about their lives publicly than men.
Right. And I think it's interesting because this podcast, I feel like a lot of women were excited because it is tailored to fangirls, like women. So I think it's more, more of a safe space kind of for women,
yeah,
to tell their stories.
Yeah. So no, it's a great idea. Yeah.
Okay. What have been some of your favorite experiences working on your podcast?
Oh, gosh. Well, so I'm a fan of like true crime podcasts and stuff.
Oh.
So I treat myself like I fancy myself a detective. So there's like stuff that when I solve a mystery about four kids, like there was some lost media that we were able to uncover. Somebody happened to have some that we were interviewing. So we found these, like, this lost episode of Ultraman Tiga. And I mean, it was as if I had just solved, I'm trying to think of a, I'm like Sherlock Holmes. Like, I am so proud of myself. So it's the moments of discovery that are really fun for me. Or like when I find, you know, there were a lot of questions about some of these uncut DVDs that got made. And I found someone who worked in the home video department, and I wrote to him. I said, do you know anything about this? And he wrote back and said, oh, those were my idea. I mean, I did it. It was like a happy dance like you've never seen. Like, I, again, felt like a detective. Like, I found the guy. So, yeah,
it's DNA
those
pathologist,
moments.
Right? That yeah. DNA pathologist putting
totally,
the pieces
that's
together.
That's what I feel like. Yes. On Bones or whatever shows they uncover things on. Yeah. So it's the discovery process of it for me. Because, I mean, in all honesty, anime is not where my fangirl lies. It's just not right. Because I work in it. So it's demystified for me. From a very early time, it was demystified for me.
Right.
So I think it would have been strange if that was my fandom.
Right.
So the podcast itself, like, I feel like I'm discovering this for other people. Like, we have a Discord channel where we share stuff. And like, if I can, you know, they'll send me sound clips and they're like, we want to know who voiced this. And it 4Kids was notorious. They just made a list of credits. They never said who played what. So literally, I'm sending sound files to like director. I'm annoying my friends constantly sending them sound files. And then when we do figure it out and I present it to our Discord channel and I know how happy they are to have it solved, I am living vicariously through them. And even though I kind of don't care who voiced it, I'm still as excited as they are.
Right. You're facilitating someone else's inner fangirl.
Yeah.
You really are.
Well, that's exactly what it is. And if I can help that in any way, without it being like, listen, I'm sure some of those people have an unhealthy obsession and I hope I'm not feeding that. But if I put a smile on their face by finding it and all it took was an email, then I'm thrilled to help.
Oh, that's great. Do you find yourself remembering things from dubbing with 4Kids that you may have forgotten when you're talking to guests?
Sadly, my memory is, there's things I remember, but they mention things and I keep wishing that it'll like unlock a treasure trove of memories that has not happened yet, unfortunately.
Yet.
But it is fun to watch their memories get unlocked. Like once in a while, I'll ask a question that suddenly I get so many apologies before the podcast where they're like, listen, I don't know how much I'm going to remember. And suddenly we sit down for the interview and something sparks something in them and they talk for an hour about a project they thought they knew nothing about. So that it's not me remembering, but it's fun watching their memories get unlocked.
Right. You're placing them back in that time in that place that kind of brings back all these.
Yeah.
These moments for them.
Yeah. It's really cool to see.
That is
and
really cool.
Yeah. Especially because I think a lot of us have mixed feelings about our time there because, you know, it's like any job. No job is perfect. And it was an imperfect company because everywhere is. And, you know, maybe people didn't get paid right. Maybe they didn't get treated right or the intensity of the schedule. But what I'm watching their mostly happy memories come back to them, which is kind of fun.
That
so
is
again,
very...
if I can facilitate that, it's cool.
It's very cool. Now, I would like to ask you my final question, and
yes.
I want to know what advice you would give to women who are trying to succeed in the entertainment field.
It's a tricky place right now because I think we're figuring out, first of all, what's going to happen with a lot of, I encourage everyone to pursue their dreams, but I also encourage you to look for jobs that are not replaceable. You know, we've watched shows, especially in animation, get cut from streaming networks. I think there is probably an oversaturation of work and of product in general happening. And now a lot of places are paring back. So I think find your passion, be savvy about it. But also I've watched so many people who consider themselves performers find happiness and joy in other aspects of this industry. And I think I wish I had been more open to that. To producing and doing other things that, not that necessarily offered more stability, but would have made me a more well-rounded human.
Right.
So I think just being open to all areas. I always say, like, if you want to live a creative life, be open to all sorts of creativity. And that might come in surprising places. Because that was my goal. It was to be a creative person. And I didn't, again, I think I would have been upset if you told me I was only doing voiceover work. And I'm not upset about it. But I think 18-year-old me would have been like, but no, I'm a theater actor. I'm a TV actor, you know. But there's, this is so fulfilling. So I just say, be open to every aspect of this industry, because it's changing constantly. Technology is changing it constantly. Learn everything you can about it.
I think that's wonderful advice.
I hope so.
Well, Tara, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me today and telling me, sharing your stories with me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And where can we listen to your podcast?
Oh, anywhere you get podcasts. It's 4Kids Flashback, the number 4. 4KidsFlashback.com. You can find our Patreon page, or you can find places to listen for free. And I'm at Tara Sands VO, and I post links to all that nonsense on my pages. So
thank you again, Tara. I appreciate it.